Where's your favorite sector coming into Q2 here?
I've been talking about for the past couple of years, I've been talking about four, main investment topics: real estate, infrastructure, precious metals, and energy. Yeah. I think that we're coming into, like a 10-year period where those are going to outperform other asset classes.
Gold's hitting record highs. Yeah,
gold's been great. Silver's been doing well. Real estate's starting to bounce back. Actually, we had in the Wealth Advisory, we have this office REIT that, folks said that I was crazy for recommending because, the office is dead. Nobody's going to go in office anymore. Yeah. Well, it turns out, that the market likes to speak in superlatives, but it rarely acts in them. And this company just got a huge deal from PricewaterhouseCooper, formerly PricewaterhouseCooper, now PwC, to basically fill up like 25% of this new office building that they just built in California. And it's a huge deal. It's a long-term lease. It's really big, and it sent share prices up like 7% in a week. So
all right, let's get started. Welcome to the Angel Research Podcast. I'm here with Jason Williams, another Jason.
All the Jasons in the building.
If you hate Jasons, this isn't the podcast for you.
No, this isn't the company for you. And if you hate Jasons, I'll be completely honest. If you hate Jasons, just stop watching right now. Come on. We're great.
So real fast, before we get into it, this is just a quick reminder to subscribe. We always say so at the end, but I'm like, are you guys making it all the way to the end? Are you only just waiting?
So.
And as soon as I'm going to make the pitch for you guys to subscribe, you're just like, all right, you're already out. So like, subscribe if you want to get more great content. It's not just a podcast. We have a ton of videos
My partner just finished filming a top stocks video.
Yeah, that's one of our most popular series, right? So you guys are, monthly talking about your favorite stocks that are in the Wealth Advisory portfolio.
Yeah.
So you get a little bit of freebie action.
Yeah. So this is a service that we actually provide for our paying members.
Yeah.
But we'll put the first four stocks up on the YouTube channel for everybody to see, it's a little try before you buy, like everybody wants to sample,
Everybody wants
the free sample before they actually purchase the stake or whatever.
And all of our services have, free trial periods.
Uh-huh.
So
yep.
It's pretty easy, but also, that requires you to, go to the order page and fill it out and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so this
you do
is
have
just
to give
a click
money
on the video
to get the risk-free trial.
Right.
I'll give it back if you don't like it, but way you don't have to give me anything up front. Just
So you just watch the YouTube video.
Yeah.
You can see what kind of plays you guys are talking about in that service.
Yeah, and we just want people to subscribe to the channel, hit the bell to make sure they get notified, give us a thumbs up if they like it, drop some comments. Really, really wish we got more comments. I love hearing
them. Oh, just wait now. People love to.
I hope so. Please, make them like SFW these guys.
Don't hold back.
They don't have to be G rated, but let's not exceed PG-13.
All right, so let's get into it. Today, actually, GDP numbers 1.6% for the first quarter.
It's low.
It's low, right? But
it's not
negative.
Not exactly.
So, what's your overall take on this? It seemed to be that the Fed, inflation is having trouble getting down to that 2%.
Mm-hmm.
So now after the last CPI number, people are like, okay, we're going to kind of push back the target for any rate
cuts. It's the last little bit that's the hardest. With everything, it's the last
little
bit that's the hardest.
Absolutely.
I remember being a kid and acid rain was like the big deal and it was going to kill everything. And rivers were super polluted. And there was the Ohio River or something like that. You could set it on fire or something.
Really?
But basically, we were able to remove something 80% of the pollutants that were causing all of that. It's that last 20% that's the tough part. And so that's the same thing with inflation. The high interest rates definitely help deal with it. We sort of have, we definitely have a government that's pushing back against the high interest rates with high spending. So that's not really helping. It's the last part's the toughest. The last part's always going to be the toughest. And I think that, I've been saying that inflation was going to be harder to deal with than the Fed and everybody else anticipated. I think the Fed needs to keep rates high. I think they need to honestly take them a little higher. But they don't want to cause a recession. They don't want to tank anything, especially in an election year. And, this is the same Fed that, kept rates way too low and said that inflation wasn't a big deal, nothing to see here, gonna go away real soon. And so I just don't trust them to make the right decision. So
yeah, I mean, it is a – I get it. It's a tough decision.
It is. And if you're trying to be data-focused, it's even harder because, like, the data says different things. You know, you've got, like, a not-so-great GDP reading, but you've got really good employment numbers. You've got,
right.
Like,
and
know,
I
not
think
so
all
great
things,
inflation, but you've got really good, you know, consumer sales or spending or whatever.
All like things being considered, you probably want to – a miss on GDP as opposed to like spiking unemployment. So because the Fed's going to be looking, okay, are people still employed and are the inflation sort of, is it sort of coming down? Mm-hmm. So
you got some people out there who are saying that they're just going to adjust their target.
Right.
You know,
the
move
new
goalposts.
Yeah. Move it to three instead of 2% inflation, three, which I that was a big thing. So I guess we'll see. But
it's possible.
I mean,
all arbitrary numbers. I mean, it sucks to see things getting more expensive all the time.
Yeah.
But it is kind of the way of the world.
So the market's down, you know, on this news. But it seems to be one of these things where, you know, the initial reaction to some of these things are negative and then people digest it. And then it's the next day or so. They're like, OK, well, maybe this is kind of a good thing because it's showing that, yeah, maybe the economy isn't overheated to the point where they need to raise, you know, inflation or raise interest rates again.
Yeah, we're definitely. I mean, I don't think we're definitely not going to see interest rates go up.
Yeah,
they may stay higher for longer as they keep saying it. I mean, they haven't been high for that long to begin with.
Well,
anyway,
and what's high, right? We're not, you know.
Yeah, historically speaking, we're sort of like in the middle ground, and they're definitely not going to take them up. I'm still pretty positive that they're going to take them down, and I think this GDP reading, you know, gives a little bit better, you know, argument for that too. But you know, markets have been volatile, and that's great. You know, if you're trading, you got to have volatility to trade, and it's given people lots of opportunities to, you know, folks who missed out on the rally in the first half of the year, the first quarter of the year, to be able to get in on dips and buy in. And you know, I mean, the market's going to go up. Over the next 8 years, it's going to double. You know, I can guarantee that. I can't necessarily tell you where the next 100 points are going to go.
Right.
You know, but.
Yeah, and that's where our focus is. You know, we don't have a lot of trading traders around here doing technical trading or, you know, a lot of technical analysis as much as, you know, our trades are very company-specific, trend-specific.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the best way to do it. You know, there's two like sayings on Wall Street, you know, don't fight the Fed is the one that everybody knows. But there's also don't fight the trend. Right. And like the trend is stronger than the Fed. And we saw
is your friend. Right.
The trend is your friend. Right. And don't fight the trend either. You know, if the trend is down, you know, don't argue with it and say that it should be going up. Just, let it go down.
Yeah.
Buy when it's low. But, you know, the trend is stronger than the Fed is the thing. And we saw that in 2023, you know, with the Fed raising interest rates and the market continuing to go up. You know, as the Fed tightened financial conditions got looser.
Yeah.
You know, like so when they got done hiking rates, we actually had looser financial conditions technically than we had had before they started raising rates.
Yeah, it's really strange. I guess people are baking in, you know, them eventually cutting because the market's forward-looking. But who knows? I mean, next week we could be looking at a whole new set of data, so we can only go off of what we know now. And
yeah, and that's sort of what they're doing too. You know, they're not telegraphing too far in advance. You know, I don't like that they're telegraphing at all, to be honest. I don't know. It's a different Fed than what I grew up with. Even though, like, you know, I grew up with the Greenspan, you know, Fed and then Bernanke after that. But, you know, like, they were just low interest rates, but they didn't really, like, they actually tried to stay out of
the
press.
It was very tight-lipped.
Whereas
and now it's like this coordinated.
Like
Yeah, exactly. It's like this coordinated effort where it's like, oh, okay, maybe they got a little bit, maybe they were on, we telegraphed too much. So you over there, you know, at the St. Louis Fed or whatever, you go out there and have a little conference and say these exact words
and then
to try
you
to like
call your buddy
it.
Over at the Wall Street Journal or at Goldman and, you know, tell them this.
Yeah.
No, it's totally. I really don't like it. I remember hearing stories that Greenspan used to, when he was going into the press conferences and stuff like that, he would take a car, you know, and he would go in through a private garage entrance into a private garage, through a private entrance, up a private elevator, because, like, if he tripped on his way into the conference, the markets would dive. And he was like, he didn't even want to do that. And then you've got this Fed that's out there just, you know, like constantly,
yeah,
you know, talking about what they're going to do, what they're not going to do, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like just put everything out. Everything out there, and then there's no, you know, anybody can interpret anything the way they kind of want to. So it's like, you know, analysis paralysis almost.
Right.
So there's
right.
just too much stuff out there.
There is a ton of it. There definitely is a ton of it.
All right. Well, it is what it is. Let's switch. Let's focus a little bit on some sectors. Where's your favorite sector coming into to Q2 here?
You know, I've been talking about for the past couple of years, I've been talking about four, you know, main investment topics: real estate, infrastructure, precious metals, and energy.
Yeah.
I think that we're coming into, you know, like a 10-year period where those are going to outperform other asset classes.
Gold's hitting record highs.
Yeah, gold's been great. Silver's been doing well. Real estate's starting to bounce back. Actually, we had in the Wealth Advisory, we have this office REIT that, you know, folks said that I was crazy for recommending because, you know, the office is dead. Nobody's going to go in office anymore.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out, you know, that the market likes to speak in superlatives, but it rarely acts in them. And this company just got a huge deal from PricewaterhouseCooper. But formerly PricewaterhouseCooper, now PwC, to basically fill up like 25% of this new office building that they just built in California. And it's a huge deal. It's a long-term lease. It's really big. And it sent share prices up like 7% in a week. So the real estate's working out now too. Infrastructure, I love infrastructure. And when I say that, I mean like energy infrastructure, pipelines, yeah. transportation, storage terminals, things like that. And then energy, too. And I think that's what we should talk about because like when a lot of people hear me say energy, they're like, oh, oil, gas, yeah. coal, stuff like that. But I mean, you know, all forms of energy. You know, I'm a proponent of all kinds of energy. I actually, you know, it's no longer Earth Day, right? Monday was Earth Day, but it's now Earth Week because we've stretched it out.
Okay, yeah, yeah. You kind of milk that.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like your birthday week. You know, like, it's a birth week. You know, why not? I'll celebrate for a week. So anyway, in honor of birth week, I finished building our garden shed over the weekend, and I put my solar panel on it.
Okay.
So we have a solar panel and a lithium battery in the garden shed so that we've got lights in the garden shed, and I didn't have to have somebody come out and run an electrical line there. And so, you know, I'm all for – and I live in West Virginia. 80% of our power comes from coal. So, I mean, yeah. like, you know, I'm an outlier with that,
yeah.
you know, with that solar panel. But I'm all for – you know, I'm all for energy independence. I'm all for, you know, for – whatever energy, because energy is what drives civilization forward. It's what drives humanity forward. It's what, you know, ends starvation. It's what, you know, like equalizes countries. It's what brings people up. And so I'm all for all of the energies, and you got to have like a good mix there.
Yeah. No, any future that anybody can predict out there involves massive use of energy,
yeah.
right? I mean, unless you're one of these, I mean, I don't even know if they're out there, these wacko people that think like, hey, like, we should just
go back to
like
kind of
like Ted Kaczynski style, like
mammoths and stuff.
Right.
And
just live off the land.
Dead people. We can't ride them anymore. I'm sorry. All right. And so, all of the good caves are taken.
Yeah. So it's really just the predictions of AI use, you know, crypto,
yeah.
electric cars,
all of that
grid
stuff you know,
like it's just is it going to be massive or very massive
yeah.
energy use?
Yeah. And it's going to be very massive because the population is going to keep growing. You know, I mean, every time we add another person, we need more energy to support that person. And I mentioned, you know, I like the idea of being, you know, energy independent. So like with my shed, you know, I didn't have to hire an electrician. I don't
yeah.
have to pay the power company. You know, I'm always going to have, you know, power out in that shed. Granted, it's not a ton because I didn't put in like a huge battery or
right.
anything. It's a shed. But, you know, that shed is independent. It's off the grid. And I think that, you know, energy independence is not just important for individuals. It's really important for countries, you know. And so the U.S., you know, we're talking about, you know, the high inflation and stuff. And the last time we had high inflation, we were sort of dependent on other countries for our energy. And that, you know, led
yeah.
to some big problems. So we had the fuel embargoes from OPEC. And we don't have that now. The U.S. produces more oil than any other country has in history now, right? But one thing that we don't produce that we're going to need a lot of in the future is lithium. Right? Because, I mean, like I said, I've got a lithium battery in my shed. I didn't do that because it's trendy. I did it because the lithium battery is this big, and it packs as much power as a lead-acid battery
yeah.
this big. you know, so it's a smaller thing. It's super light. I can pick it up with one hand, but, you know, it's a 20 amp hour battery. If I had gotten that in, you know, a traditional type of battery, it would have been huge. It would have been really heavy, like, you know, probably like 30 or 40 pounds. And so I got this one because it's better. You know, and lithium batteries are definitely like the best that we have out there. There's companies that are working on developing different formulations with different right. energy metals.
But for like a, you know, a shed like that.
Yeah.
And so you have
storing power in your house. If I had put solar panels on the house, we'd put lithium power packs down in the basement most likely.
Right. Because you're going to need light, you know, during the day, you might not need lights in there. It's at night, but the sun's not shining at night.
Exactly.
So you could collect the power during the day. You store it in this this lithium battery.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, the shed's got windows. I don't need to turn the lights on during the day. Like, that solar panel's literally just to collect the energy so that if I have to go out there at night, you know, or if I have to charge, you know, a power tool out there or something like that, the weed, we've got an electric weed whacker, so you got to charge that up.
Yeah,
you know?
So it seems like the technology has reached a point where it's no longer, you know, hey, we need to, you know, the green sort of environmentalists, like, don't drill for oil, don't use oil. Like, it's just like solar and wind are actually just competing economically with these other forms of energy. And like you said, it's just, you know, being off the grid or being out in the middle of nowhere, these data centers that they're building
data centers out in West Virginia, you know, I mean, like, they're going to have to put something near them. You know, they can't just hook those up to the grid.
Right. Exactly.
You know, you literally just don't have enough power to hook up to the grid. Actually, a great example is in British Columbia, right? If you have a cannabis company in your town, they will not approve a crypto mining operation in your town. Because there's not enough power in your town to support both businesses. You know, so if there's already a cannabis company, you got to take your crypto mine somewhere else because we don't have enough power for you. It'll black out everybody else, and we're not going to have that. So, I mean, you know, they literally need to build off-grid. So you had a lot of crypto operations who were getting, you know, like natural gas turbines and burning off the excess natural gas. But no, I mean, when I talk like energy independence and when I talk about like, you know, the future of energy, like, yeah, these are competing sources of energy, but I think they're all going to be part of a big mix that you know, that we all use. One of the things that I think is really crucial is that, and I can use my shed as an example again, I did not buy that battery from Duracell or Energizer. It is a Chinese company. You know, like, and that's where most of the batteries come from because China owns the lithium refining market. And while like most lithium is mined outside of China, they have huge investments in most of the companies. They have offtake agreements with most of these companies. So basically they're buying up all this lithium, they're refining it, they're turning it into batteries. And then we're planning on basing our future on those batteries. And like, you know, China and the US, like, while we try and maintain civil relationship, like, we're not really great friends. And it's not great to have to rely on somebody who could be a future adversary for your energy needs, which we saw back in the 1970s. What if we get a lithium embargo?
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
yeah, and I mean, we're seeing it with the computer chips now, a Taiwan semiconductor.
Yeah, what happens there? I mean, that's NVIDIA's biggest chip supplier, because, like, you know, these chip companies don't make the chips. The fabrication companies do. And Taiwan Semiconductor, that's a fab plant in Taiwan. But, you know, that's just a couple miles from China. You know, and it'll take China a while to actually get it because it's a mountainous island and they'd have to invade from the sea. But like, you know, they'll get it.
So I guess what you're saying, are you looking at more domestic supplies of lithium?
Yeah, and we need domestic supplies, and we need them to be controlled by companies that aren't controlled by, you know, Chinese investment firms.
Right.
Because, you know, most I don't know if I feel like everybody should know this by now, but, you know, the Chinese Communist Party has an investment bank, and it used to be called Angbang, and I think they changed their name. But anyway, like, they basically are a shareholder in pretty much every publicly traded company in China. And so if a publicly traded Chinese company is invested in one of these companies, the Chinese government, you know, technically owns that company. And so anyway, you know, we need our own sources. We need our own supplies. We need them, you know, within our own borders. Like, you know, the U.S. can produce more oil than any country currently or ever in history. We should be able to do that with lithium too. We have the reserves. You know, we actually have, you know, lithium brine formations. We have lithium spodumene formations. We have lithium that resides in clay, which, you know, you extract that the same way as you do from hard rock, but because it's not as hard, it's easier. You know, because that's usually what, you know, things that aren't as hard are. You know, and we've got this stuff. We just need to develop an industry. And right. You're actually starting to see big American companies go into it. Like most recently, I just did a report for my subscribers about Exxon. Exxon Mobil just made a huge purchase in a big lithium field in like the southern part of the U.S.
Okay.
And so basically, like this is the largest lithium field by area. You know, it's a brine field, so that means it's, you know, water underground, like salt water underground, and the lithium's dissolved in that water. And you drill a pipe down, and you pump the water up, and basically you're pumping, you know, stuff down in to pressurize it,
mm-hmm.
push the lithium brine up, extract the lithium, put the water back into the ground, and, you know, sell the lithium for batteries. And the thing is, though, is that Exxon's just getting in here, right? Which is huge. That's big.
Right.
Like, Exxon just spent billions of dollars, an oil company,
yeah,
for a lithium deposit, for a lithium asset that's relatively unexplored, that's relatively, undeveloped. And I say relatively because there's another company that's actually been working down there for the past like 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been drilling, they've been testing, they've set up a little pilot plant where they've like tested their extraction techniques. And basically what they're able to do, it's really cool, is they're pumping this lithium brine out of the ground. They're extracting the lithium with this, you know, specialized technique that they use that basically involves, you know, chemicals that they put in there that bind with the lithium and pull out the good stuff and leave the bad stuff in there. And then they're able to take this, run it back through this closed loop system, pull the chemicals that they used back out, and then put this clean water back into the ground. So you're not having, you know, reservoirs being depleted. You're not having like problems where, you know, there were these caves underground that were filled with water and now they're not filled with water anymore. So they're collapsing and creating sinkholes. You're not having any of those issues. And because their refining process, or not their refining, their extraction process is so good, they're basically pulling out stuff that's almost battery grade, like already. You know, it barely needs to be refined before it has to be turned into a battery. And so they've had such success that they're setting up a full-scale plant down there for extraction, and then they're also going to set up their own refining plant right down the road. And so they're going to have a refining plant right down the road from ExxonMobil, from their own operations, and from Albemarle's former lithium mine, the Silver Peak mine, that they're starting to open up again too. So, you know, they're going to have all of this, you know, all
and
of
Albemarle
these potential
is pretty much the biggest
partners.
Lithium
Albemarle
company out
is,
there.
Is, yeah, they're number one or number two, depending on, you know, the day of the week,
right.
Basically, with SQM is a Chilean company.
Mm-hmm.
But those guys are number one and number two. And so, like, these guys have. This small company, basically, it has the expertise in the area. It's already got, you know, the assets in the area. It's already been able to produce from the area. And so it's got these big companies right next to it, which I think, you know, would either make, you know, great partnerships.
Yeah.
Personally, I'd prefer to see that because then it can sort of help everybody and make money from all of them.
Right.
But, I mean, this is ExxonMobil. Within the last 10 years, was the biggest company in the world.
Right.
They could just buy this guy up, you know, 100% premium, 50% premium, give investors like a good takeover offer and just buy it up and take that over. And then they don't have to invest, you know, they don't have to invest in the starting up of the process.
Yeah.
They can get rolling right away.
Yeah, it's very interesting, especially nowadays with the way technology goes. I mean, I guess it's kind of been like this for the past 20 years in like Silicon Valley, but it really happens in all industries, is these like upstarts that, you know, they have this new technology and then quote unquote, the Google comes and says, yeah. Hey, we're going to buy it. I mean, even famously like, Instagram,
uh-huh.
You know, that was sold for $1 billion to Facebook and people are like, what? You're paying $1 billion? And then now, you know, it's worth 10x, you know.
And it turns out that like the reason that they offered $1 billion was basically because they were terrified and they were like, we need to get this now.
Yes.
Like, we can't make a lowball offer. Just offer them way more than it's worth, because otherwise they're going to eat our lunch.
Well, and if you want to look at a similar scenario that has already happened, I was talking to Alex Bolden about the carbon capture industry.
Oh, yeah.
And so he had a play that was – it sounds very similar now that your play hasn't done a deal with Exxon yet. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, not yet. Not yet.
But this company had the carbon capture technology, and it was pretty much the same thing. They basically took – I don't think they did a straight out 100% buyout.
No, I feel like it was like – that they basically own 80%
of
the company.
Yeah, so they
now.
Bought a bunch of shares of, you know, 80% of this company that – and they're like, okay, we're going to work – you know, we want this technology, but we're also going to work with it to grow this technology.
Yep.
And they essentially – they had their own carbon capture division that they're essentially kind of merging in with this new company. So you get the upside of having like an independent company.
That's what these big companies do.
And the potential growth of having these big guys.
I mean, they have R&D departments, but usually they're buying their research and development. You know, they're expanding inorganically would be the, you know, technical term for it. But, you know, that's what big companies do. I mean, you look at even in the tool industry, you know, Stanley bought Craftsman from Sears. You know, because like, well, it's a good brand, man. Like, and Sears wasn't doing anything with it, so they were like, "Yeah, we'll take that. Like, that's great. We'd love to expand into that market." And you know, I think that's what Exxon's going to end up doing here. Or you know, the shareholders at this small company see, you know, that there's you know, they'll maximize their value better by sort of, you know, working with everybody and setting up partnerships as opposed to selling out entirely, or doing investments like that, you know, doing joint ventures, you know, all of these things are possible. But really, like, what they all end up, you know, adding up to is profits for this small company that's already there where all of these big guys want to be. And so, you know, I just think it's a really good opportunity for investors. And I think American lithium in general, you know, domestic sources of lithium in general are a really good opportunity for investors right now. You know, they're in their very, very early stages, you know, exploration, you know, some in development stages, but not really in production yet. You know, but that's when you want to buy them, you know, is before they start producing. Because once they start producing, then, you know, that's when the share prices are going to run up. I just think it's a really good opportunity for people right now.
Yeah, it seems like... You know, maybe people realize that, you know, the U.S., really North America in general, it really does have a lot of resources.
We do. That's how we became such a rich country is by, you know, I mean, I hate to use the word exploit because it's got such a negative connotation, but by exploiting our natural resources.
No, I mean, you pretty much have to. I think lately, now that, you know, the environmentalist movement has made so much ground, which is great. You know, we want to protect the environment.
Right, and that's why I hate using the word exploit, because, you know, I mean, like, we cut down trees for paper, and then we plant new trees, you know, and we're literally cutting down forests that are grown just to make paper. You know, we're not, you know, just going out there and slash and burn anymore. Well, not everywhere.
Right.
But, you know, these companies are doing, you know, like the lithium company that I mentioned, their closed-loop system. You know, where they're doing this, you know, so that they're not polluting, they're not putting chemicals back into the ground, they're not, you know, pulling something out of the ground and, you know, creating sinkholes and stuff. I mean, like, they're actually taking, like, sinkholes aren't really like an environmental problem, they're more an issue for homeowners. But, you know, like, that's the kind of steps that companies are taking now here. So, I mean, yeah, we're exploiting the natural resources, but, like, we're also taking care of the planet because we need to... You know, we need to be able to continue to exploit.
Yeah, and people, I think, are also coming around to the idea that it's just, like you said, energy independence, resource independence, and not having to be beholden to these regimes on the other side of the world that do not treat their citizens as well as, you know, other people would like. So it's, you're doing, you know... Do you want to have, you know, like in, what's it, the Congo, we have like, you know, child labor, like mining for cobalt and all this kind of stuff and just like bad shit going down.
Yeah, no.
Or do we
really
want to have
stuff.
It under on our own soil, where, like you said, there's actually some structure of, like, hey, you can't just, like, take a 10-year-old and throw them down in a pit and say, give me some lithium.
No, exactly. We've got the toughest regulations in the world. You know, if you can set up a mine in the United States, you can set up a mine anywhere. But, like, if you can set it up in the U.S. successfully, why would you want to set it up anywhere else? You know, I mean, you don't have to worry about a warlord coming and taking your mine. You know, you don't have to worry about, you know, drug dealers, illegal mining operations, all of the other things that go on, you know, in all of these other different locations. And you've got this, you know, you've got a domestic source, you know, you're and you've got a captive customer. I mean, you know, Americans love to buy, you know, stuff from America, and the American government, like, especially loves to buy stuff from America. So, you know, it's a big opportunity for companies, and I see a lot of companies moving in on that, and I think that investors need to be there too, because, like, you know, it's the early movers that make the most.
Yeah, I like, and I think, I feel like we don't even need to even make the argument for why lithium is a good investment at this point. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, we've talked about it over and over again. I mean,
well, hey, maybe we should, you know, because people saw, you know, prices got up to like $65,000 a ton, and then they just tanked, and stock prices went with them. You know, so, like, maybe some people did get burned in that. But the thing is that, like, yeah, lithium prices got really high. But actually, my partner at the Wealth Advisory, Jason Simpkins, explains this really well, is that basically lithium demand is – it grows at a constant – not a real constant, but basically a constant level. It's a slope.
Right.
Right? It's a sloping line. It's curving upward, you know, and it's getting higher and higher and higher. Lithium supply comes on in chunks, right? So it's like a line graph and a bar chart, right? Because, you know, you spend 10 years setting up your new lithium mine, and then all of a sudden, boom, you add 20 million tons to the global supply the next year.
Right.
But then you got to spend 5 more years, like, building that mine before you can add another 10 million.
Gotcha.
You know, so it goes in chunks. And so we basically had a point where we had demand way higher than supply. We get big chunks of supply coming on, expectations for future demand came down a little bit, and, you know, basically,
begin the cycle again,
the market a little bit.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that tells me now's the time to get back in.
Oh, definitely, you know, definitely. I mean? And, you know, you see all the old school, like, miner guys that I talk to. There's a guy that I know up in Vancouver, and surprise,
a mining guy
in Vancouver. But no, this guy, oh god, I love him. He's like what Vancouver venture capital could be if they wanted to be, you know, like, really good. He's just the best at maximizing shareholder value. He helped build out Millennial Lithium and Lithium Americas and a couple other lithium companies, basically. But, you know, he's, while other people who got in and started new lithium companies while prices were really high are like, oh, crap, what do I do? Like, maybe I should get out of this. He's just super excited. He's putting more money in, you know, he's like developing these wells. He's like, this is the kind of time that I dream for, Jason. Like, I didn't think I was going to see something like this again in my lifetime. This is amazing. I'm so excited. Like, you know, I'm putting money personally in, my family's putting money in, everybody's. And, you know, this guy's, I mean, he's like as old school as you get. Like, this guy's been making money in the mining industry since, like, the 1950s, 1960s, you know, and he's still doing it, and he structures these companies really well, and he maximizes shareholder value. And if he's excited, you know, that gets me excited. I think everybody should be excited about it.
Interesting. All right. Well, I think the link to the report will be at the bottom of this video/podcast. We'll
excellent,
put it in the description if people want to
nice,
learn more.
I like that.
And I think that's a recommendation in your Future Giants newsletter.
Future Giants.
That's so we're talking about high upside plays here.
High
you
upside
know what I mean?
Plays,
that's
definitely.
Future Giants. We have the Wealth Advisory is more of your income based, a little bit more
income focused, long term holding periods, stuff like that.
You gotta have
future
both,
giants
right?
Can have long term holding periods too, because really we're focused on companies that, you know, are small now but have the potential to become giants of their industries. Hence the name Future Giants.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes that takes a little while. But you know, we've had some great gains. You know, we were buying. I've got a great example here. It's an oil stock. Since we were talking energy, and they were able to get some really great discounts on some assets out in Colorado. And not long after they got these assets, Chevron and Occidental and Civitas all started moving in on this area and just paying billions of dollars for big, big properties, like all around their property. And so we were buying shares at under $2 a share at the, it's the beginning of 2023, I want to say. Maybe end of 2022, but it was right around $2 a share there. Last I checked, it was at $16 a share. So folks are making out pretty well on that one, you know.
Yeah, and that was only after a year.
I mean, granted, we've watched that one for a little while.
Yeah.
It took a little while before the fire ignited. But now that it started, you know, I think that's a $20 stock, like easily just with what they have, and they're going to continue to expand. And that's the kind of stuff that we target, you know. We focus on trends, you know, growing trends that we think are going to last a long time. And we look for companies that have something that's going to help that trend along, that either, you know, a big company like Exxon is going to want to come in and buy out, or that like these bigger companies are going to want to partner with.
Yeah, sounds like a no-brainer to me.
It works out well.
All right. Well, we'll wrap this up. Appreciate you coming on. And again, I'll have a reminder to like, subscribe, and comment, particularly on Dubs. And
give me some comments, guys.
Yeah, Dubs, and comment on his watch. I don't know.
Compliment my Apple Watch. I love this thing.
All right. Awesome. We'll see you next time.
All right. Take care.